This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhizkar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنبَتَتْ سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى مقومًا ولا أذًى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas announces parliamentary and presidential elections to take place later this year, the first vote in 15 years. U.S. authorities step up security around the state capital amid concerns about violence ahead of the inauguration of Joe Biden as president. And rescue and search operations continue in Indonesia's Swazi Island following Friday's earthquake that killed 45 people and injured hundreds. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has announced the first election in 15 years to take place later this year. According to a decree issued by Abbas's office, the Palestinian Authority will hold legislative elections on May 22nd and a presidential vote on July 31st. According to the decree, the election will take place in all Palestinian territories. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has welcomed the announcement, saying it has worked in the past months to resolve all obstacles on the way of the elections. Palestinians' last parliamentary ballot in 2006 resulted in a landslide win by Hamas, but the rival Fatah movement later rejected the results and seized control of the West Bank. U.S. state capitals are being fortified amid fears of possible armed attacks in the days leading up to the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. High security fences are erected around government and federal buildings. The governor of Florida has called up National Guard to support local and state law enforcement. In the capital, Washington, D.C., officials have taken unprecedented security measures, including the deployment of up to 25,000 National Guard troops and road closures. D.C. Mayor says the city will have to maintain heightened security even after the presidential inauguration.
I'm sad about it. I have to tell you that it looks that way. I'm committed to making sure that we get our city back. Our visitors, our residents, our workers will be able to get through the city with ease. But I also know that we have a special responsibility, that there is a peaceful transition of power in our country. We're proud in Washington to host the federal government. And we want to make sure that event is peaceful.
Hauser said the U.S. has to deal with how intelligence and security services deal with a very real and present threat at every level. The FBI has warned of armed protests in Washington and at state capitals in the days leading to Biden's inauguration. This comes in light of the January 6th siege of the D.C. Capitol by supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar has announced his resignation, citing last week's deadly siege of the Capitol by supporters of President Donald Trump. U.S. media say Azar has informed Trump of his decision in a letter in which he called the Capitol incident an assault on democracy. Azar also reportedly cited some success of the administration, including rapid development of COVID vaccines, but said the attack would tarnish these legacies. This is while the Trump administration has been heavily criticized for its dealing with the virus or the vaccine's distribution strategy. Azar's resignation is the latest in a series of departures of presidential aides and cabinet officials over the Capitol violence, just days before Trump leaves the White House himself. U.S. President Donald Trump said days in the White House are numbered. He will soon become a former U.S. president, but as we will see in the next report, his impact on American politics and society will not end anytime soon.
Today I am calling on all Americans to...
Donald Trump has undoubtedly been the most controversial president of the United States. He has managed to make sworn enemies and inspire diehard supporters all across a divided America. His term in office is almost over now, but not the mixed feelings and fierce controversy surrounding the outgoing U.S. president. This week, Trump set a new record. He became the first ever American commander-in-chief to be impeached for a second time by the House of Representatives. Trump now faces trial in the Senate for allegedly inciting a group of his extremist supporters to violently attack Congress last week. In the worst possible scenario, he could be barred from ever holding public office again. That would practically mean the end of his political career. Back in 2019, Trump was impeached over his dealings with Ukraine, but finally acquitted by the Senate. This time, things could look a lot different, as a growing number of his fellow Republicans have said openly that the embattled president must be convicted. Trump has never been so isolated. Many members of his inner circle have either abandoned the lame duck president or seem to have distanced themselves from him. The outgoing president has also lost his cherished Twitter account, and many large corporations are boycotting him. Trump could be wiped off the face of U.S. politics, but his legacy will live on as dangerous divisions deepen in American society.
His main legacy for America is that he's the only president in the history, in American history, to have been impeached twice. Through his mismanagement and his ignorance, he allowed the COVID-19 pandemic to ravage this country, to decimate the economy, and he's the worst president in American history.
400,000 small.
This is expected to complicate things for Joe Biden from day one in office.
And we're in the middle of the once in several generations economic crisis.
Now, Trump's successor will have to deal with many domestic and foreign challenges, but right now, leading a divided America will probably be the toughest task facing the future president of the United States. Joe Biden will have to deal with the fallout from Trump's chaotic leadership from the very first days in office. The next U.S. president will be sworn in on January 20th. Trump insists that he will not attend Joe Biden's inauguration. Trump's dangerous rhetoric and actions are causing headaches for federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. They are now busy preparing for the possibility of even more violence.
The United States will soon have a new president. Joe Biden will take office in the coming days. His upcoming swearing-in ceremony will, however, be different from any past presidential inauguration, all thanks to Trump. Security concerns intensified over the past week. Federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies are taking extraordinary measures to secure the ceremony in the capital of the nation. Authorities say they have received information indicating the possibility of more violence during the inauguration. The FBI, for instance, says armed protests are being planned all across America. More than 20,000 National Guard troops will be among the forces that will try to secure President-elect Joe Biden's swearing-in ceremony. Security forces say they want to prevent a repeat of last week's deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The developments of the past weeks in the U.S. have raised serious questions about the credibility of American democracy. Was Biden democratically elected? Authorities have found no evidence of irregularities. So why does Trump still insist that the November election was stolen? And why do so many millions of Americans still believe what he says? Some observers believe the post-election chaos in the United States shows a growing lack of trust in the system and elections.
That's evidence that the experiment called democracy right now isn't working. On the one hand, the fact that we expect there to be a orderly transition of government is a good thing. But what we have to go through to ensure that there is an orderly transition of government does not bode well for America.
Biden will probably try to improve the situation, but the divisions in the United States are too deep and cannot be mended overnight.
So tonight, I'd like to talk to you about our way forward.
Last year, the number of homicides in the United States reached a level not seen in nearly three decades. The murders are mostly confined to poor areas populated by minorities, and many say that is the reason the violence is both ignored and untreated. Ramin Mazahari has more from Chicago.
Across the United States, local newspapers are running the same headlines. A record-breaking year in murders. Not since the ruinous crack cocaine epidemic have poor areas been so culturally and emotionally devastated by violence. The coronavirus lockdowns in the United States were widely criticized for being enacted without any apparent consideration as to how it would affect their lower classes. Adding lockdowns on top of bad housing, lack of access to food, police brutality, and other endemic problems put unbearable stress on those who could least afford it. The tremendous economic suffering also decreased the revenue of America's rampant gang activity, which many allege is aided by corrupt cops, and sparked increased fighting over market share. But Chicago, the nation's third largest city, is indicative. Almost half of all shootings here took place in just 7% of neighborhoods, which are dominated by poor African and Latino Americans. These areas don't just lack schools, jobs, and health care, they even lack sidewalks and garbage cans, because both private banks and the government refuse to make even basic investments.
The solutions remain what they have always been. The solutions remain investment into neighborhoods. The solutions remain accepting authentic leadership that people will listen to because these leaders have the best interest of the people in mind versus leaders who cooperate and who are co-opted by the system. If you really want change, you have to do something different. That means there has to be more focus on the value of human life, less focus on the value of stock market.
But the blame can't be put all on Corona. 75 of the 100 largest cities in the country saw an increase in fatal shootings in the first quarter of 2020. American poverty and instability have soared since the 2008 economic crisis, but America's disregard for the poor of all colors goes back much further.
The solution remains in America looking into the mirror and seeing the ugly side of who she is and making a decision to change, making a decision about where to put money, making a decision about how much money to be placed, making a decision about holding police officers and other powerful figures in government and in society accountable for their wrongdoing, and really caring for the development of the American people versus those who are at the top of this oligarchy which poses as a democracy.
The highest year-to-year increase in murders ever recorded across urban America was 13%. 2020 saw an estimated increase of nearly 40%. The decision of the nation's political elites to not release a second household stimulus until after the presidential election is being widely blamed for increasing the unstable conditions which inevitably provoked the record tragedies of 2020. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Thousands of Honduran migrants on their way to the United States have crossed into Guatemala. Guatemalan border agents put up no resistance as the migrants passed. Guatemalan police put the number of migrants at around 4,500, saying they include families with children. The migrants are fleeing violence and poverty in Honduras, and they are in search of better living conditions. The government of Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Mexico have asked migrant caravans to be mindful of COVID-19 prevention rules and immigration laws as they travel. The mass migration has raised concerns about spreading the virus within the region. Rescue workers are searching for buried survivors after a powerful earthquake on Indonesia's Sulawesi Island killed 45 people and injured hundreds more. The 6.2 magnitude quake struck the early hours of Friday, causing extensive damage and triggering panic among residents. It was followed by 5 magnitude aftershock. Rescuers have pulled dozens of bodies from under the rubble. Officials say the number of people trapped under the collapsed buildings is not known. The tremor damaged more than 300 homes and 2 hotels and flattened a hospital. 15,000 residents were evacuated temporarily. Shelters and nearly 200 treated for serious injuries. India has started the world's biggest COVID vaccination drive with the aim of protecting its 1.3 billion population from the deadly disease. Prime Minister Narendra Modi launched a campaign addressing medical workers via video conferencing. Around 300,000 people will get the shots on the first day, starting with healthcare workers and people aged above 50. Officials hope that 300 million people would be inoculated by early August. Recently, the government approved the use of 2 vaccines. One of them is jointly developed by AstraZeneca and Oxford University, while another was developed by local pharmaceutical firm Bharat Biotech. India is the world's second most infected nation, with more than 10 million coronavirus cases and almost 150,000 deaths. Now, as Italy passes the 1 million mark for vaccinations, there is concern among health authorities that public skepticism over COVID-19 vaccines could undermine the country's fight against the coronavirus pandemic. Max Civilli reports.
Italy topped 1 million COVID jabs since the start of the vaccination campaign on December 31st, according to the latest data, out of over 1.5 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine delivered across the country since December 27, more than 60% have already been injected, the highest number of first doses administered in the EU. However, some Italian media have been warning in recent days about an increasing number of medics and health workers not willing to be vaccinated.
Vaccination rate among health workers is quite high. However, about 10% of medical staff remain very skeptical. The lack of testing is one of people's main concerns. We are observing the effects of the vaccine while it's being administered.
A poll released in mid-December caused surprise in Italy by showing that 1/3 of the population were not willing to be vaccinated, along with half of nurses and other health workers.
I have my reservations over the vaccine because the matter has not been discussed much yet. I would have injected only if it becomes obligatory.
New polls are showing the scenario seems to have changed in recent days, with more Italians willing to receive the coronavirus vaccine. Medics promoting anti-vaccination propaganda had been warned or disciplined by doctors' associations.
Doctors' guilds in Italy have been conducting inquiries into medics accused of unwarranted criticism of vaccinations. tens of medics have been punished with measures ranging from warnings to two-month suspensions.
Doctors Guild's actions being timely and appropriate. Unfortunately, some medics should be trained on how to express their views on social platforms as they aren't aware of the consequences of their inflammatory posts.
Meanwhile, a joint report by the Health Ministry and the Higher Health Institute is warning the COVID-19 epidemic in Italy risks becoming uncontrolled as the virus RT reproduction number has been increasing for 5 weeks straight. The country's COVID-19 death toll has risen to over 81,000. Max Civili, Rome.
Now that brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the most merciful.
In the limelight.
The lead author of a new research package notes that Insects are absolutely the fabric by which Mother Nature and the Tree of Life are built. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jessica Corbett Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Nature is Under Siege. Scientists sound alarm about insect apocalypse. Stay tuned for the details, please. Of new scientific papers authored by 56 experts from around the world reiterates rising concerns about bug declines and urges people and governments to take urgent action to address a biodiversity crisis dubbed the insect apocalypse. The global decline of insects in the Anthropocene special feature, which includes an introduction and 11 papers, was published recently in Proceedings of the National Academies of Sciences, alongside a related news article. Nature is under siege, the scientists warn. Insects are suffering from death by a thousand cuts. The set of studies resulting from a symposium in St. Louis counts as the body of research on insect declines has grown in recent years, leading to major assessments published in February 2019 and April 2020, as well as a roadmap released last January by 73 scientists detailing how to battle bug apocalypse. As the new package explained, human stressors that experts have tied to bug declines include agricultural practices, chemical, light and sound pollution, invasive species, land use changes, nitrification, pesticides, and urbanization. Emphasizing the consequences of such declines, University of Connecticut entomologist David Wanger, the package lead author, told the Associated Press that insects are absolutely the fabric by which Mother Nature and the Tree of Life are built. According to Wagner, many insect populations are dropping about 1-2% per year. As he put it to The Guardian, you're losing 10-20% of your animals over a single decade, and that is just absolutely frightening. You're tearing apart the tapestry of life. While most causes of declines are well known, there is one really big unknown, and that's climate change. That's the one that really scares me the most, he said, warning the crisis could be causing extinctions at a rate that we haven't seen before, he added. Van Kling of the German Center for Investigative Biodiversity Research told The Guardian that the most important thing we'll learn from these new studies is the complexity behind insect declines. No single quick fix is going to solve this problem. There are certainly places where insect abundances are dropping strongly, but not everywhere, he said. This is a reason for hope, because it can help us understand what we can do to help them. They can bounce back really fast when the conditions improve. The package's introduction points out that while much recent research and resulting news coverage focused on drops in bug populations, four papers in this special issue note instances of insect lineages that have not changed or have increased in abundance. many moth species in Britain have demonstrably expanded in range or population size, the paper notes. Numerous temperate insects, presumably limited by winter temperatures, have increased in abundance and range in response to warmer global temperatures. Pollinators such as the western honeybee in North America may well thrive due to their associations with humans, the introduction adds. Increasing abundances of freshwater insects have been attributed to clean water legislation in both Europe and North America. In addition to the introduction titled Insect Decline in the Anthropocene, Death by a Thousand Cuts, the package includes seven perspectives. Agricultural intensification and climate change are rapidly decreasing insect biodiversity. To us insectometers, it is clear that insect decline in our Costa Rican tropics is real, so let's be kind to the survivors. Insects and recent climate change. The decline of butterflies in Europe, problems, significance, and possible solutions. A window to the world of global insect declines. Moth biodiversity trends are complex and heterogeneous. Deep learning and computer vision will transform entomology. No boss for bees. Media coverage of pollinator decline. The body of work also includes three separate research articles. Arthropods are not declining but are responsive to disturbance in Laquito Experimental Forest, Puerto Rico. Insect biomass decline, scaled to species diversity. General patterns derived from a hoverfly community. Non-linear trends in abundance and diversity and complex responses to climate change in Arctic anthropods. The final piece is an opinion laying out eight simple actions that individuals can take to save insects from global declines, which features five actions to create more and better insect-friendly habitats, the loss of which is likely a leading cause of insect declines, and three that aim to adjust public attitudes. As Darna Noor wrote in her coverage for Earther, I do not like bugs. Creepy, many-legged things make my skin crawl. But as unpleasant as they are, insects are absolutely crucial for our world ecosystem to function. And sadly, new research shows that the creatures' populations are on the verge of collapse. To boost awareness and appreciation of insects, the scientists suggest countering negative perceptions, pushing for conservation efforts, and getting involved in local political advocacy. On the habitat improvement front, they recommend converting lawns into diverse natural habitats, growing native plants, cutting pesticide use, limiting light pollution, and lessening soap runoff from washing vehicles and building exteriors, as well as the use of drive-away sealants and de-icing salts. Avoiding some behaviors or adopting others will contribute both directly and indirectly to insect conservation, the scientists note. Further, taking actions that address issues such as climate change can synergistically promote insect diversity. Climate change is increasingly recognized as a primary factor driving local and regional plant and animal extinctions.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
European News Bulletin.
Hello and welcome to another European News Bulletin with me, Robert Carter. Tonight we will be exploring the biggest news stories, but also taking a look at what's trending on social media with my colleagues a little later on. But first, let's take a look at tonight's top story. Hundreds of people have protested outside a police station in Cardiff, Wales, for a second day following the death of a black Muslim man. Mohamud Mohammed Hassan died hours after he was released from police custody, chanting "No justice, no peace." Demonstrators made their way to the police station, demanding justice and an investigation into the 24-year-old's death. Mr. Hassan was arrested on Friday evening after reports of a disturbance at his home, but was released the following morning without charge. His family have accused police of abusing him whilst in custody, which they believe led to his eventual death. Well, for more information on this, let's go to Lee Jasper now, a former London mayoral advisor who has campaigned against racism for many years as well. Mr. Lee Jasper, thank you so much for joining me, sir. Firstly, I just want to ask you if you can tell us a little bit more about these accusations against the police.
Well, they are not accusations, they're matters of fact. The fact is that Mahmoud was perfectly fine prior to his arrest, and after his release from his arrest, he was clearly battered and bruised, split lip, tracksuit splattered in blood, as well as having severe bruising all over his body. That's the fact of the matter. He was met by his auntie on his release, who urged him to go to hospital. He said he was tired and wanted to sleep, and therefore went to rest and was found to be dead when they tried to rouse him. So I think the facts of the matter are very clear. He was fine before he went under arrest, and he was clearly the worse for wear when he came out of the Cardiff Bay police station, and subsequently he died. Those are the facts of the matter.
Now, I've read a piece you've written about this case so far. It seems as if the police are not handing over the CCTV footage, which they should have as part of their uniform, of what actually happened during his detention, I believe. Perhaps you could just update us on that. Any likelihood of getting that anytime soon?
Well, we're looking for the public to support our demand, and there's a public petition to that effect, calling on them to release the video footage. If the police have got nothing to hide, there should be no problem in releasing footage of his arrest, his transport to Cardiff Police Station, his detention in Cardiff Police Station, and his subsequent release the following morning. And we're demanding that, as a matter of course, and to address the acute and extreme concern of the general public in relation to what happened to him, that those videos should be released immediately. And we're calling on the Independent Office of Police Complaints to do so.
Now, I believe you've been in touch with the family as well. If that's true, perhaps you could tell us how they're coping following the death of Mr. Hassan.
Well, they're deeply traumatised, as anybody was. He was 24, he was expecting his first child. He'd moved recently from London to Cardiff. They've lost a beloved son, a cousin, an aunt, an uncle. So you can only imagine the tragic loss and sense of trauma that the family is going through at the moment. So it's deeply saddening to see them in such pain.
Now, in the little time that we have left, I'll call upon your years of experience. For our international audience, does the British police have a problem with using brute force against minorities?
They certainly do against people of African or Caribbean descent. Although we make up only 3% of the population, we make 16% of the total people who are arrested using police force, according to the Home Office data. We're also disproportionately targeted through racial profiling by the police service, who, as an institution, have a culture of institutionalized racism that executes profound injustice on our communities on an almost daily basis.
Well, thank you very much, Lee Jasper, for speaking to us about this story. We will be following it as it develops for sure. Well, we're heading over to the social media world now, and my colleague Ahmed Caballo has been assessing what's been trending online today. Let's bring him in now. Ahmed, what have you got for me?
Yes, there's been a fierce reaction online. A lot of people are talking about the protest and the fact that 200 people who were outside Clive Bay police station basically forced this issue and forced the newspapers and the journalists and the media organisations to stand up and pay attention to what looks like another unjustified death in police custody. Now, what's angered so many people, as Lee Jasper has mentioned, is if the police have got nothing to hide, why won't they show the footage? And on social media, we're seeing different people saying different things. And a lot of people are saying that if Black Lives Matter movement was not just a kind of fade in history, something that was a hashtag that happened last year, if it's something sustainable that really shook the conscience of the British public, then they should care what happened to Mr. Hassan, and they should be speaking up about his death. So I've got a tweet from Kasim. He says, if you said Black Lives Matter last year, if you supported the protest, if you learned about white supremacy, if you started a reading group, if you mourned Black Lives more than you mourned statues, now is the time that matters. Now we've got a VT from a friend of Mr. Hassan who was there, who's outraged about yet again the lack of accountability amongst the police officers when someone dies shortly after being in their detention. Let's play that VT.
He was about to become a barber. They don't care about that.
No.
They care about the colour of his skin.
Yeah.
If I kill a police officer, I get 25 years.
Yeah.
They kill us, they get a suspension.
Yeah.
We don't need that. No justice.
No peace.
No justice.
No peace.
So it almost appears as if this is turning into some kind of British version of the George Floyd killing that took place in the US last year.
Yes, I mean, the problem is people look at police brutality, systemic racism, as something that happens over there in the United States, far away. But the UK has its own problem of systemic racism, of a lack of accountability. Since 1990, there's been over 1,000 deaths in police custody, and not one police officer's been held accountable, even when the evidence has shown that the person didn't offer no threat or did not have a gun, such as the case of Mark Duggan that started the 2011 riots here in London. Now, Amir has come with a tweet. He says, his family and friends told me he recently got married and his wife was expecting a child. It's absolutely heartbreaking for the family. Hopefully justice will prevail. Justice for Mahmoud. And this is an important point. Sometimes when black people from ethnic minorities, they die in police custody, we think about the way they die and we kind of strip away the life that they had before, the fact that they meant something to their community, to their family, and so on. We've got a human rights lawyer that's asking some pressing questions about the circumstances surrounding his death.
Why was he, upon release from Cardiff Bay Police Station, battered and bruised? And why did he die so soon after being released from Cardiff Bay Police Station? And is there any link to the injuries that he sustained that had any cause to his death?
OK, Ahmed, we just have time for one more tweet and then we'll have to move on. Now, what do you have from the online world?
So a tweet from Neil says, a lot of anger in Cardiff, and rightfully so. A young man is dead and there are serious questions about what happened to him while he was in police custody. We need justice, transparency and accountability, and we need it quickly.
We do have to leave it there for now, but thank you very much for bringing us the additional information on what is turning out to be quite a story of massive public interest here in the UK. Thank you. In other news, British researchers have declared that ethnic minorities should be considered extremely vulnerable to COVID-19. According to their research, systematic racism has meant that people from ethnic backgrounds were twice as likely to die from COVID-19 than the UK's white majority population during the first wave of the pandemic. The report explained that people from ethnic backgrounds are much more likely to work in high-risk jobs, which exposes them to COVID-19. Which in turn leads to the higher rate of infection, hospitalization, and death. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has received the coronavirus vaccine produced by China's Sinovac company in a bid to set an example and encourage others. The move comes after reports suggesting the efficiency of the Chinese vaccine is close to 50%, significantly lower than its Western alternatives. Erdogan called on other political leaders and lawmakers to set an example for the rest of the country. More than 50 million Sinovac doses have been ordered, and a Turkish-made vaccine is expected in May. Progressive voices in the US Congress have been widely criticized after refusing to follow strategies to force a vote on Medicare for all during the ongoing pandemic. Robert Inlakesh explains why so much of the US left-wing public are unsure on whether or not to trust the Democratic Party.
The U.S. progressive cry to bring Medicare for All to the U.S. Congress for a vote has been ignored by the Democratic Party's AOC and fellow progressive representatives. Knowing that these same self-described progressives will willingly vote for expanding the U.S. military budget, but never break from their party to grant a substantive policy change in favor of the U.S. public, is it time that we stop viewing these people that say things we agree with or look like us as instant allies? Progressive show host and comedian Jimmy Dore first came up with what became known as the hashtag Force the Vote campaign, in the hopes that the Democrat politician Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez would leverage her vote for Nancy Pelosi to be re-elected as Speaker of the House. Nancy Pelosi is a pro-war, anti-Medicare establishment Democrat who has a large part to play in not fighting to grant U.S. citizens stimulus payment checks at crucial stages of the ongoing pandemic, whilst allowing trillions to go for corporate bailouts. Jimmy Dore proposed that if AOC threatened to withhold her vote in the House for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, if Pelosi would not grant a vote for Medicare for All, then others would follow suit. In fact, it turns out that the vote to elect Nancy Pelosi did turn out extremely close, and just a few votes would have made a difference. However, AOC went back on her past promises to fight for Medicare for All and decided to shield pro-war Pelosi from having to push for a vote on Medicare for All. Instead, AOC and Democratic Party-funded progressive media went on the offensive against Jimmy Dore for suggesting that the self-described progressive use her political leverage in order to get a vote passed on a bill passed in pretty much every other developed country. With the progressive movement now split by this controversy, many taking the side of Jimmy Dore have been left in despair about the lack of real progressives actually fighting for policies to help the U.S. public. Also, the question has been posed as to why the public should value people who talk a good game and claim a certain identity, as this has turned out in almost all cases in U.S. politics to be absolutely meaningless. Ultimately, politicians are supposed to represent the people who vote for them. People should not vote for someone because that person looks the part or is a good actor. It should be on policy. If that politician they voted for then refuses to push for what they received public support to do, they should no longer be in power. Yet for some reason, people continue to believe in these figures. The same can be said about the right-wingers who support the likes of Donald Trump. Trump was arguing to end the wars and to push a conservative agenda aligned with the values of his supporters. But once in office, the swamp he claimed to be poised to drain became his bath. Whilst U.S. politicians approved billions for the U.S. military to blow up black and brown people all throughout the global South, U.S. so-called progressives continue to obsess themselves with having as many black and brown faces in office in order to do that exact same thing. The reason why it is supposed to be a good thing to have diversity, to have representation of minority communities and radical political thought in government, is so that we can see them represent those views of the communities in question and political movements. If they don't, there may as well all be white men sitting in there in white robes in DC offices, because at least then the enemy is transparent. Progressives have to fight in order to win in government. Just sitting there and getting on camera now and again for attention and to virtue signal, in fact, only works to pacify the left, because they come under the illusion that they actually have real representation.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we covered the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
The British government has rolled out many different schemes to fight the COVID-19 pandemic's onslaught on its economy. The supposed goal is to avoid mass redundancies and unemployment. But where are the billions of pounds needed to sustain such efforts coming from? The Bank of England is now under scrutiny for printing vast amounts of money, which economists say will further increase inequality in the years to come. Bianca Rahimi tells us more.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, millions of Britons have been sent home by struggling businesses and employers to sit it out. To prevent a spike in redundancies and mass unemployment, the government has introduced a furlough scheme to pay 80% of their wages up to £2,500 a month. In August 2020, the Eat Out to Help Out scheme revived the hospitality industry a little, and businesses have been offered grants to keep their heads above water until spring. But many might be wondering where all this money is coming from. The truth is, the Bank of England is using quantitative easing to keep government borrowing costs down. In other words, the bank is printing money for the government to spend. The adverse effects of the Bank of England printing more than £450 billion to get the country out of the COVID-19 crisis will be felt in the very near future, and by ordinary working people, because most of this money will invariably end up in the pockets of the rich and influential, and very little will trickle down. Whereas before, money flowed in a circular fashion in the economy, with ordinary workers paying mortgages and bills to property and business owners, who went on to spend that money on more assets and living the life, money is now flowing on a straight line from the Bank of England, where it's being printed, into the pockets of ordinary working people, and then into the pockets of the rich. By the end of the 2020 to 2021 financial year, the UK is expected to set the highest recorded level of borrowing in peacetime history.
The system is fundamentally flawed. Rich-poor division has got more extreme. The type of jobs coming in are not the old secure, well-paid jobs. They're the insecure, low-paid, temporary jobs. So you're looking at something where the moment is a sort of the pumping of the money is keeping the thing alive. But as soon as you start ending these programs, the realities of a collapsing economy, not just in the UK, the yellow vests, Brexit and Trump are all the result of a fundamental insecurities going on right the way across.
After the pandemic, the rich will go on to buy more stocks and bonds and property, and the surplus money in the economy will lead to its devaluation, pushing ordinary people with fixed salaries further down the economic ladder. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Germany's Foreign Minister Heiko Maas has accused US President Donald Trump of having trampled democratic rules by denying the outcome of the election and inciting his supporters to storm the Capitol last week. Maas said such incidents should prompt democracies to examine the enemies within and call out political leaders who incite violent rioters to undermine democratic norms. He also highlighted the use of social media to spread lies. Twitter and Facebook both recently made headlines when they removed the outgoing president from their platforms. Well, our final section on today's programme takes us back over to social media, only this time with my colleague Robert In Lakesh. Rob, your first story takes us over to Yemen, I believe. Apologies for that. It appears we're having some audio issues. However, I'm sure Robert In Lakesh will be joining me once again very soon. The topic which we are going to discuss will be the ongoing war on Yemen. Obviously, the United Nations has issued a stark warning to the US following their designation of the Yemen's Houthi Ansar Allah movement as a terrorist organization, which they plan to do this month. The UN has warned that if the US goes ahead with this move, then it could lead to a famine in the region, the likes of which hasn't been seen for over 40 years. I believe I have Robert In Lakesh back on the line. Let's bring him in now for more on this story. So, Rob, I just introduced your story. Perhaps you could give us the details. What's social media saying?
So we're going to go straight over to social media right now and look at what people have been saying online to what you've just outlined there, a horrific circumstance. First of all, we've got from Anthony, who says, all to spite the Biden administration and hand a parting gift to Saudi Arabia, etc., Secretary Pompeo will go down in the history books as one of the most loathsome, villainous, evil people to serve in any capacity at the State Department. I hope you suffer what you've prescribed for millions. We've got another one here as well who says, it's absolutely tragic, it's unbelievable that the Trump administration could have this started under Obama. Biden, oh shoot. Yeah, Trump didn't help it. Trump is awful, etc. Lock him up. But this only happened because Obama started supporting it first.
Now, In Lakesh, I have time for just a little bit of analysis from you on this. What do you think is going to happen with Yemen once Biden comes in?
Well, this is an interesting one. Many are speculating that Joe Biden wants to try and get back into the JCPOA and also negotiate to have a settlement, a peace settlement inside of Yemen. If that is going to go ahead, he needs to undo this this designation of Ansar Allah as a terrorist organization, and also its leaders as well, or else it's virtually impossible for it to get done. And also, if he is going to allow for aid to continue to go to Yemen via U.S. charities, the United Nations, then he has to undo this move. So all eyes on the Biden administration coming into power in just under a week now.
Well, we have to move on to your second story now, but an equally interesting one. It's an area of your specialty, Robert, I believe.
Yes, and interesting developments that we're seeing inside of 48 Palestine, or what some people would call Israel. Netanyahu attempted to go and deliver a speech inside of Nazareth, which is populated primarily by Palestinians, and was met with large protests as he attempted to do this. What was interesting to see is that Palestinian Israeli citizens, members of the Knesset, were dragged off, who were prevented from even going to the protest. They assaulted Palestinians, grabbed Palestinian flags away from them. This is part of an ongoing trend that we're seeing inside of the occupied Palestinian interior, that we are seeing that Palestinians who are citizens of Israel are rising up on a more frequent basis now, are more angry with the Israeli regime for the way it is treating them. We're seeing this in the Nakba. We are seeing this in Haifa right now with daily protests ongoing over the Israeli police shooting of an innocent Palestinian, they say, who did absolutely nothing wrong, drove past police and, of course, did not injure a police officer. And incidents like this where we see even members of the Knesset being attacked as well. Netanyahu was attempting to garner votes, and that doesn't look like it is likely. And it also, as well, goes to show that the Palestinians inside of Israel, of Israeli citizenship, are making a difference in that they are voting for the Arab parties inside of the Knesset, and they pose a problem for Israel even forming any type of government, because Netanyahu and his competitors will never accept to include them inside of a government so they can occupy a large space.
Well, we've got a little bit of time for that social media reaction, Rob. Perhaps you could tell us what people are saying online.
first one we've got here commenting on this says, Israeli police tackles at joint list members of the Knesset and prevented them from attending the anti-Netanyahu protest in Nazareth. We've got another one here as well from a user called Noga, who says Netanyahu's Nazareth visit, addressing himself to the same public he recently called terrorists and a fifth column. He called on the people there to embark on a new era. He was met with major protests. The police arrested about 10 people, including Knesset members who are immune from arrest.
Well, we are out of time. There is a lot more to say, unfortunately, but thank you, Robert Inlakesh, for your time today. Stay tuned.
In the limelight. The article you're about to hear under the heading "A New Polio Vaccine Joins the Fight to Vanquish the Paralyzing Disease" has been authored by biomedical writer Amy Cunningham. Stay with us for more of Amy Cunningham's article.